does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. On a much lighter note, Scott Pollard, this is the best news we're going to share all day. 8-plus days after the most frightening scene that we've seen in modern NFL times, DeMar Hamlin today is home in Buffalo, out of hospital care, continuing his rehabilitation.
Who would have thought? The way that the players reacted live, I happened to be watching it live, and the way the players reacted live, I thought there was no chance he was even going to be alive. The way they react, because when you're on the field, you're on the court, you see it, you hear the injury, you know.
Were you watching with your son for just clarity here? Scott's son is an up-and-coming high school football player in Carmel right now.
Yep. He was watching with me, and we were sitting there like, whoa. Because you look at the other players, again, we knew. When you're on the court and somebody blows out a knee or turns an ankle or something, and you can hear it, and you know. And so when I'm watching the other players after this happened, and you watch the replay, and gets up and falls down, and everybody just loses their minds. Everybody's crying. Immediately, the thought goes to the worst possible outcome. Just, again, because of the players' reaction. So, yeah, very scary, and so glad, so happy that he's out of the hospital just over a week later. It's unbelievable. And I loved how, thoughts and prayers became real.
Yes.
And everybody nationwide and worldwide was like, let's do this. His foundation that had a goal of $2,500, but last I heard was over $8
million. Yep.
I mean, just that's love. That's humanity, and that's who we really are. Regardless of what people log into social media to yell at each other and scream at each other and say awful things to each other that they wouldn't say in person.
Such a waste of time.
You would never say these things in real life to somebody.
No. Nope.
But they think that social media is the place that they get to do their horrible, disgusting things and threaten people, whatever they want to do. The reality of humankind came out this week, and we finally saw what everybody on the planet really is like, with the exception of a few marginal people. Most everyone on the planet, humans, are good people and want good things for other people.
Amen,
and
Scott
Pollard. I love that this took place. I love that it brought humanity together, and I love, most of all, that he's out.
What a scene it will be if the Bills continue this postseason run, and just before kickoff, DeMar Hamlin walks out of that tunnel, obviously in street clothes with his jersey. I mean, there will not be a dry eye in the nation. Again, right now, we are going to go to the post. GoldenBlack.com. Alan Karpik is on the mower shop from Fisher's Hotline. Alan, thank you for waiting here. We have sat and we have marveled with the latest Matt Painter masterpiece, a backcourt of freshmen, a center that 2 years ago no one wanted coming out of Florida. The word on Zach Edey was, well, he's a big kid from Toronto who just averaged 4 points in prep ball. He's more of a hockey and baseball player. Your sense of being along for this ride very closely, this coaching job for Matt Painter, what has been the key in the early going for the third-ranked team in America?
Well, I want to first express the same sentiment on DeMar Hamlin. I thought you guys said that very well, and let's hope that what an amazing story. And not to put it anywhere close to the same context, because it's not.
I'll be
very, very clear here.
Sure.
But Purdue's ride has been a good one, and if you're a Purdue fan, it's been enlightening and inspiring, certainly. You know, it's a funny thing in college basketball, as you guys know, that in the last week, Purdue rode the roller coaster. They lost a tough game to Rutgers in a very competitive game that Purdue didn't play as well as it needed to, maybe. But Rutgers also played very well, made the plays down the stretch
right.
to win. But you have to be appreciative of the job that Matt Painter's doing and this staff is doing, because you're talking about three guys that not a lot of other folks wanted. they're all now all Big Ten level. I'm not saying they're all going to be first team All Big Ten, but they are all Big Ten level players. I think sooner than later, certainly Braden Smith and Zach Edey are, and Fletcher Lawyer at times has been, especially of late.
He's been clutch, Alan.
So, So, yeah, so it's a good story so far, and I think Purdue's in a good position to have a really, really good year. We already know that, but it'll be interesting to see. It's a funny league, the Big Ten, and how it's played out so far. Illinois going to Nebraska last night and just mopping the court with them is impressive.
Yeah.
Again, it can all change in a week, and yet Purdue is in very good position.
Alan Karpik on the Mower Shop from Fisher's Hotline, Charlie Cliver to Wish TV, Scott Pollard. Alan, I defer to all post-conversation to literally the man to my right who was sent into games to stop Shaquille O'Neal. Scott Pollard, you've watched Zach Edey. Alan, you've been along for this ride. Gentlemen, your thoughts on what is, for my money, the most interesting story in the college game this season?
Alan is the guy that was the kamikaze pilot, so to speak, as Charlie said, to go in and prime Shaq and try to slow him down. What are teams doing to Zach? And what's his demeanor, first of all? It's a two-question. What are teams doing to try to slow him down? And second of all, is he one of those guys that's like, hey, coach me up. Yeah, loud, kind of a cagey guy. Like, I'm going to be here, and I want you to do this. Or is he more of like a Tim Duncan guy where it's like, hey, I'm going to absorb this. I'm going to just work and work and work. I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, I think, first, he is very much a – I call him kind of a point guard for a center in terms of understanding the game and knowing the flow of what needs to be done and what needs to get better. He has a reputation, and I've seen it, is a hard, extremely hard worker. We've seen what he's done in terms of, Scott, you've seen it from a basketball standpoint, how much better he's gotten in the last year in terms of just the little things that, yes, I know he's playing more minutes and I get all that, but he's worked on his footwork. He's worked on his jump hook. He's worked on everything that he's had to work on. And yes, it's an amazing story from that standpoint. But, you know, he's just got a great personality. He's very hard worker. He's very soft spoken. Doesn't draw a lot of attention to himself, but he just plays. And I think the guys in the team extremely respect that a great deal. He's a leader because of not only his longevity on the basketball team, only Mason Gillis and Brandon Newman have been around longer at Purdue, I should say. So that is a very unique situation, a very unique guy. And he loves to talk basketball. That's the thing. He understands the game, and he understands, you know, when he's throwing the ball, passing the ball out of the double team, he knows what he's doing. And the answer to your first question of what are teams trying to do, great question. Kingsbury kind of took a different approach last game of not doubling. Not trying to rough him up in the second half, and they paid for it because Braden Smith and Zach Edey were just having it was a clinic in the second half in terms of just throwing the ball up to the rim, and Zach Edey for the most part just slamming it through, and that's a credit to them. But the thing that Matt Painter always talks about with Zach Edey, which is really an interesting thing, is what great condition this guy is in.
Right,
he runs, at 7'4". I don't want to, and Scott, you have to truck that big body up and down the court. It's extremely difficult. But to do that even at 7'4 and stay in the game in an offense that Matt Painter likes to get up and down the court. He's got a point guard in Braden Smith that loves to get up and down the court. And that's been probably one of the most impressive things, is he can play 30 minutes a game, and he does it, and he doesn't seem to run out of gas.
Well, I got to credit the strength and conditioning coach then, because that's behind-the-scenes work.
Call.
That's both Zach and the strength and conditioning coach, and Zach listening to him. Because, and I'll even go one step further, that's also a condition that is only present in multi-sport athletes. When you grow up playing multiple different sports, you're working different muscle groups. I'm tired of seeing players that started to focus at 10 to 12 years old into one sport.
Refreshing.
And they wonder why at the age of 19 they have chronic knee problems or they tear up their elbow because they've only played one sport. And knowing that his background in multiple different disciplines makes him coachable. He's had different coaches from different sports telling him what to do as he upbring, and then someone had to talk him into playing basketball, which is hilarious, but also reminiscent of another guy that I played against that's my age, Tim Duncan. And so that's when I asked about his demeanor, he seems like a Tim Duncan guy. He seems like
love
he knows every
connection.
Single thing that's going to go on the court because he's a student of the game, and he's not talking the loudest because he's watching it. He's absorbing it all.
Yeah.
And his basketball IQ definitely reminds me of a Tim Duncan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's Scott, that's a good comparison. You know, obviously, you'd love to see for his professional aspirations a spot up game, and few had him like Tim Duncan.
It's coming, Alan. You know it's coming.
But I do think he does have that very quiet demeanor of just playing. You know, he doesn't talk a lot on the court. He gets frustrated now and then when he gets poked all over the place, which he's had. But he had blood running down the side of his face at Ohio State, and didn't even notice that. He just does the job, and he's turned into also a very, very. And I understand he's 7'4", but sometimes the guys that sized aren't really good rebounders. He's an excellent rebounder.
Alan, I'm not going to cut you off, but I'm going to cut you off because I'm going to tell you that 7-footers very typically are lazy because they're 7-footers, and that's one of the things I love about him is he's not. He goes after it.
He is just, and he's funny. He's not. I know he's not a stat stuffer. And I know in the NBA you know a lot more than I do, but in terms of guys, there was those unwritten rules about who could grab the rebound when there wasn't any contesting going on. He gets the ball, and he's got other guys on that team that love to rebound too, with Mason Gillis and others. But he is a guy that just plays, and I think that's a very unique thing. I mean, he's, as I say, I mean this in a positive way, he's not a circus act. I mean, he's 7'4", and he's the biggest human that probably most anybody has ever seen when they see him for the first time. But this is a guy that just has done everything he's had to do to make him really, the front runner for National Player of the Year.
Alan Karpik's on the Mower Shop in Fishers Hotline, themowershop.com, for all your snow blowers, commercial and residential mowers, plus service and power tools. Alan, Friday, Nebraska comes in, as you mentioned, tough one for the Cornhuskers against Illinois. Then a trip to Michigan State, trip to Minnesota, back at home against Maryland. It feels like very early in the season in the Big Ten slate, Purdue and IU are going in completely opposite directions. Your quick assessment on this story, because it is the story in college hoops every single year in the Hoosier State. We didn't anticipate this to be the rhetoric, maybe because of some injuries down in Bloomington. It feels like we don't know what record Indiana's going to walk in to that first matchup on February 4th. This was billed as the return of the rivalry, two potential contenders in the Big Ten. And Mike Woodson now has his work cut out for him in Bloomington.
Well, I'm going to say this, and this is probably, in my view, we're 24 days away from that game. So a lot of things can change. And obviously injuries have played a huge role in what Mike Woodson and company are trying to bring to the table. You know one thing, that when Purdue comes to Assembly Hall that Saturday afternoon, the IU will be loaded for bear no matter who they put out.
Yeah, hostile.
So, yeah. And Race Thompson is a terrific player. Conversely, and if you're a Purdue fan, you hope this doesn't happen. Purdue's had to deal with these types of things in the past, if you remember the stories of Robbie Hummel and on down the line.
Correct.
But my point is, you can't minimize what a guy like that means to your team, and not to mention Xavier Johnson. So this is Purdue's got work to do. This is not a finished product by any stretch, and I think that it's a product with a very high ceiling, and I think that that's what you saw in the second half of the Penn State game when Purdue is making shots.
What, they shoot 66%, Alan, in that second half?
Yeah, I mean, and that was maybe statistically improbable, but what they were doing before was also didn't make a lot of sense when they're shooting 23% from three or whatever they were doing. So this is a team, though, is going to be really hard to beat, in my view, if they make shots. And I suppose that's true for just about anybody. But if they can make threes, and with Zach Edey, and again, just like everybody else, you got to keep Zach Edey healthy and you got to keep everybody. But Purdue's a lot of moving parts. And I think that's one of the things that's really interesting about this team is, there are guys that are not deep down the bench, but maybe 8 or 9, Trey Kaufman Wren, who didn't get to do a lot at the Palestra, but he'll come back probably this week and get a chance to do what they seem. When you win, everybody seems to be happy, and they're a good group of guys. So long story short, I'm bullish on where the Boilermakers are. I think they got a great chance to to do very, very well in the Big Ten, and hopefully for Purdue fan, get to the NCAA tournament and do well there. But still a long way to go.
Alan, as we've encouraged Purdue fans across Central Indiana to do this year, enjoy the ride with this. This was much more of a surprise than the success of last season alongside top five pick Jaden Ivey. Even more so, you know, the years when you go back to the Carson Edwards teams and and the late great Caleb Swanigan. This is a much more out of the blue script for Purdue, and to be sitting third in the nation, 15-1 at the top of the Big Ten. Life continues to be good for Matt Painter. Please give Alan a follow on Twitter at Alan Karpick, K-A-R-P-I-C-K, publisher of goldenblack.com. Alan, looking forward to your recaps and insights against Nebraska, and we'll be following along the rest of the way, all right?
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Alan, tell big fella I'm a big fan of his.
All right, I will. I will, Scott. Thanks so much.
Indy, the wait is over. Pacers, Knicks, it means something again. We're going to the Garden tonight. 7:30 tip-off. Scott Pollard's in studio. Charlie Clifford of Wish TV. We cannot wait any further to bring on the man when it comes to basketball across the association. He does not miss a story. He does not miss a storyline. He is Rob Perez at Worldwide Wob on Twitter. Many of you have followed along for years. Wob, appreciate you joining us on very short notice here. You're simply the man. And I want to start with this. The last time a Pacers-Knicks regular season game felt like this, when was that, Wob, Rob?
First of all, I knew you guys were going to do that. I forgot it was Tom Hammond that made the call that night with Reggie Miller, and I knew I was going to get trapped by an Indianapolis radio station.
The setup, it worked.
Taking me back.
It worked.
Taking me back to that fateful, it wasn't a fateful night, it was a fateful day, and I remember it specifically because I was in attendance at that game, and I was young, and my dad wanted to leave to beat the traffic. So there is no Twitter. There is no Facebook. There is no social media. There's newspapers don't come out till the next day. And they don't even put graphics of the scoreboard on the television screen.
Right.
So I don't find out that the Knicks lost this game until we get to Grand Central Station going back home. And I'm now you see why I am the way that I am today and why I have trust issues because of that very moment. So thank you for taking me back to that.
But you beat the traffic.
That's wonderful. But I think your original question there was, when was the last time a Knicks Pacers game mattered? And I think you have to be a certain age. You know, I'm a little bit older than the traditional NBA audience nowadays, but every game between the Pacers and Knicks in the 90s was, you know, hell in a cell in a lot of ways. And while the Knicks kind of faded into irrelevancy in the 2000s, the Pacers were still Paul George era, and eventually the Roy Hibbert block on Carmelo Anthony. That brought it back a little bit.
Sure.
And it's nice to get some juice back in these games because that was, I forgot, what was it? They called it, was it Knicks versus Hicks was the back page of the Post or something back in the day. So just the cultural differences between the two cities, Reggie Miller. You know, it's got the perfect combination for a rivalry, but what's necessary is both teams got to be good, and both teams haven't been good at the same time in nearly a decade plus. So for the Pacers to be this upstart team, kind of blue collar team that is the embodiment of what they represent, and then you go to the Knicks that is also, you know, made their name being blue collar type of players with Ewing, Starks, and Oakley back in the day. And
right.
That's what you got now with their current roster. That's just a long-winded way of me saying, you know what, maybe this is the time that we can
Let's
start
go.
Caring about this robbery again.
Let's go.
Rob, because this is Scott Pollard. Because the Knicks haven't been good for so long, I've got a lot of friends that are Knicks fans. They're New Yorkers, and, you know, they're jerks. but they are people getting behind this team? You know, it takes them a long time to hate the Knicks, but now they hate them. Are the fans coming back yet, or are they still just like, they still suck?
How much time you got? let me say this, because Knicks fans are just naturally a grumpy bunch.
Yeah.
We feel like we had one of the best teams in the 90s that just couldn't get past Michael Jordan like so many others. And then we ran into Hakeem Olajuwon in 1994 and in 95, you know, at some point too. Mm-hmm. Missed our chance and then, you know, haven't had a title since, you know, well before I was born. And it's the same as being a New York Mets fan. There's always just a dark cloud of impending doom that has you that has you like not ever really detaching far from Earth. So while they go on these 8-game winning streaks and things like that, you're excited about it, but you're not like clearing the Canyon of Heroes down Broadway in Lower Manhattan to prepare this team for a parade. So when you ask, are Knicks fans like rallying the troops and fixing bayonets to get into the trenches to go to war? My answer is just look at the All-Star balloting. If you go to the front court, in the back court, in the Eastern Conference, the biggest city in this country did not vote Julius Randle.
It's D. Rose, right, Rob? Did D. Rose make that list?
Yeah, Derrick Rose made the list. So R.J. Barrett, Jalen, and Derrick Rose made the list because he has an international fan base like the size of Taylor Swift. So that Derrick Rose does not count. But R.J. Barrett, Jalen Brunson, and Julius Randle don't make the top 10 in voting. This isn't if they're going to make the All-Star game or not, because they may ultimately do so. But they didn't make the top 10 in voting in the biggest city in America. So if you're asking, is this fan base like super excited to be 3 games over 500 on a team that's in the answer, I think quite frankly is no, but that doesn't mean they're not watching or caring. We're just doing it in a very unique way.
We're in the drivehubler.com studios. This is the Mower Shop Hotline, brought to you by the mowershop.com. Rob Perez, kind enough to join us. You follow him on Twitter. Rob, 3 weeks ago, the Knicks come to Indy, close game. Tyrese Haliburton and co falter late. Wally Szczerbiak, you know, makes the statement that Tyrese is a wannabe all-star. He redacts that later. You know, look, it was just a nice piece of juice for a franchise here in Indiana that no one's talked about really since Victor Oladipo went down in early January, now 3 years ago. And the last glimmer of hope with that team was put to bed. Your thoughts on what Wally said and ultimately how that's helped Tyrese Haliburton kick it into a different gear. TJ McConnell said it yesterday at practice. Look, we've been a different team since that happened, and now we get the stage tonight at the Garden. Rick Carlisle's team is going to play tonight like it's a playoff game, I assume. Tibbs' squad will do the same.
My first thought is it's just a microcosm of our society today that if you just say something really loudly, you know, people will engage with it and it becomes a thing because it spreads fast on social media and Twitter. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you become the villain of a city for just an unsolicited comment that, you know what, I'm not going to say he meant malice by it.
Sure.
He's in the content business and like anyone else out there.
Yep.
If your microphone is loud enough and big enough, then, you know, people are going to hear it. And
yep,
that's always kind of been his MO as an analyst as well. You know, he's a big Knicks fan. I think he's from Long Island originally. It just checks all the boxes, but I'm tired from it. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of seeing him talk about it. And I'm tired of hearing the Pacers are using it as fuel in the locker room as a result. And I don't blame him because it's, you know, it was an unnecessary comment, but now you've given this upstart team another reason to like start. It's us versus them. You know,
right,
it's the best place to keep a team like that is irrelevancy and apathy will prevent the players from, you know, uniting. And now that you've invaded their lands the way that Wally Szczerbiak has, now you're going to have to show up and fight a war tonight at Madison Square Garden. And the Garden alone, by the way, has this natural ability to bring the best out of
yes,
everyone.
Yes.
I'm sure Scott can attest to this, that when you're playing in the Garden, it's just, it really is just an amphitheater of basketball. You know, yep, they call it the Mecca.
Yep.
And you add all of these things, the old Pacers rivalry we were just discussing, and these comments, and then all of a sudden you're going to get the best Pacers effort of the season tonight, probably.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a sixth man for the other team because of the history, and any player that does pay attention to the history. But I do, Rob, I have a question for after the game, because I had a tradition. Every time I played in the Garden, it was a special thing for me because my dad played there and I always wore his cufflinks. I told Charlie this earlier on the show, but after the Garden, I would always get changed as quickly as possible, get the interviews over as quickly as possible, because before the bus left the arena, I used to run across the street to a special pizza place. And it's not a special pizza place, it's a chain. But is it still there? Is Sbarro still there across the street?
I knew you were going to say Sbarro, and the moment you started setting up this story, now I'm thinking of Michael Scott.
Yes.
In the office, just getting
time to get me a New York slice.
Yeah.
Yeah, got to get me a New York slice. So I believe Sbarro is still very much there. Their sausage is very unique. Those little like ball sausages that they drop on top of it.
Yep.
And you know, for a chain pizza place, it's the New York version is really it's not New York pizza, but it's different. It's there. And
yeah.
It's really funny to hear that, you know what, I came all the way here for a New York slice and I got to get out of this locker room. So people are like, oh, where are you going? Sal's? You going to Joe's? Like, no, I'm going to Sbarro.
Hey,
like
that, proximity is a concern.
Back in the day for that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the best pizza. I'm just saying it became a tradition because it was right across the street. I wish there was a better place across the street, but I just remember that was like the most economical as far as time that we could get to and still get back on the bus without the bus and their coaches going, hey, where were you? We got to go.
Wob, you've unearthed some of the best behind-the-scenes stories in your time in terms of the Twitter takeover that's transpired here over the last 6 to 7 years. Do you have a favorite Scott Pollard-involved Kings story or a team from that era? We are often looking at each other and pulling up old things of Scott being in a complete wild man, specifically in those Kings-Lakers series. What comes to your mind first and foremost from that era of hoops?
Cowbells.
The Maloof brothers.
The Maloof brothers. Oh, my God. The Maloof brothers. Jerseys with the proper trim on them. I think he was during the champion era as well. So just these gorgeous, like the Kings logo with the little crown on top of the I or something, or the K, wherever it was. And you're getting out there and trying to, Scott has to use all six of his fouls within about, let's call it 7 minutes. O'Neal's getting the ball down on the block.
That was,
and
just
let's
bias.
Be honest, anyone that the Kings send out there is pretty much is bait for Shaq. So I just remember Scott going to the bench with a graphic that said 2 minutes, 5 fouls. And you know what? That's not your fault. You are just one of many, many victims that fell to the unprecedented athleticism of that monster guy. And that was a time. Every time and it's funny, I'm talking to Scott now because like I'm a big Survivor fan as well. And I think of Scott first and foremost with that Survivor season. But I'm like, oh yeah, he played in the end. You know, that happened too. And then, you know what? Pretty decent career. So
yeah,
that's that.
All right. Hey, one question. Do you remember, and it has everything to do with the Kings and the Knicks, there was a movie. Did you ever see How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yeah, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
You'd have to remind me of the...
There's clips of us playing against each other like it was the NBA Finals.
Knicks-Kings. Oh, I would have loved to see that
movie,
with Sprewell on your team.
I'm heavily featured. For whatever reason, I think Vlade was out, and I think Chris Webber was out because he was out partying. But I think that for whatever reason, I'm pretty heavily featured in the footage, and I didn't know I was going to be in the movie. So that brings me back. When you started mentioning the Kings stuff, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, because back then they were on the uptake. Like, there was promise that the Knicks might be good, and so they took clips from us because they set the story in the movie in New York, and they took clips from us. And of course, we didn't know, because if they use more than five players, they don't have to let any individual players know. They just buy the footage from the NBA. So we had no idea. I had friends calling me like, how much did you get paid for that movie? I was like,
zero.
None. That would be a big donut. But anyway, if you haven't seen it or you haven't, don't remember it, no big deal. But
no, do you, before I let you guys go, do you have any, because I do a weekly show with Rasheed Wallace now, and you guys certainly overlapped in your days of trying to conquer the Lakers. Do you have any good Rasheed Wallace stories that you want me to bring
up? Thank you, Rob. This is brilliant.
Man, we played against each other in high school, college. Not college, because he was at North Carolina. We never played against North Carolina. But
you played Rasheed in high school?
Yeah, at the Myrtle Beach Classic in South Carolina. Yeah, Myrtle Beach. We played against each other in high school. We flew all the way from Washington State, because I was there my senior year, to Myrtle Beach to play in this tournament. And we played against each other that year. And then
was he assessed any technical fouls during the Myrtle Beach class?
He was a great interview, even in high school. You know, whoever taught him the get the ball and hold it above your head with both hands every time you get a rebound deserves half of his paycheck. I mean, that was a genius move by whoever taught him to do that. And if he just did it by himself, then he's a genius. Because that was one of the things I always loved about his game, is that he always kept the ball away from little guys. Like, you naturally bring the ball down, everybody does. And I would always chin it because that's where I was strongest. But That's my Rasheed Wallace story, is that he always got the ball every time he got a rebound, and he would just keep his arms fully extended above his head with the ball so nobody could get it. And it was great because he's a 7-foot guy, and we didn't interact a whole ton because we just played against each other. He was a talker. I was not much of a talker. I was a sarcastic guy. I would talk to the fans that would chant stuff in the crowd, especially in the Garden. That was one of my favorite places to play because I'd come over with five fouls in 2 minutes, and the Knicks
plenty
faithful,
of time to chat.
Yeah, they start hollering at me. It's like, oh yeah, why'd you have so many fouls? Well, I was tired because I was hanging out with your mom all night last night.
Yeah, hey, Ben Stiller, you're 5'4".
We're doing a live show here in Los Angeles this Friday, and that's going to be one of the first things that I bring up is tell me about this Myrtle Beach Classic. I talked to Scott Pollard about it. That's going to be one of the first things we talk about for sure. So thanks for sharing that,
Rob. Yeah, we'll be tuning into that. Appreciate you jumping on. If I could quickly get one last thought from you, put on your tinfoil cap again at Worldwide Wob on Twitter. You probably already follow him, so that's not breaking news. Tyrese Halliburton, Benedict Mathurin, your crystal ball of where this Pacer team not only goes the rest of this year, but the now next 2 to 3 years in Indianapolis. What have you gathered from Rick Carlisle's club?
They put themselves in the best position possible to succeed for being a small market. The only way you're going to do that is by building within the draft or making trades for young players that eventually evolve and develop into stars the way that Paul George did. I think that formula has worked for many franchises. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the Spurs in the past, you look at the way the Bucks did with Giannis, and now all of a sudden they're household names. So just time and support for these two guys, which are clearly have ceilings, which I can't see that high. and they're put together here, and if you start building something that's, we're one A-lister away from being legitimate title contenders again, there will be an A-lister at some point that's like, I want to win. And I want to get paid, and this place Indiana's one of the two teams that's currently under the salary cap, so I can get it from them. The way that you're going to do that, you're going to have to check a couple more boxes in some of those major cities and desirable locations like Miami and Los Angeles, but you knew that already, and the way to do it is with winning. So they're headed the right direction. They have their assets in place. They have control of their players. That's the most beautiful part about that Tyrese Halliburton trade is you not only get him for his rookie deal, but you're going to have him for almost a half decade thereafter as well. So just the control of these players that you would normally lose in free agency is not going to be the case with Mathurin and Halliburton. So that's why you guys should be excited is you don't have to be all in the next couple of years. You can really see if these guys are meant to be the stars that so many of you believe them to be.
He's your favorite follow across the association on Twitter, Underdog Fantasy, Rob Perez. Please check out his podcast. That's What Sheed Said. That's right. Rasheed Wallace and Rob Perez now teaming up on a new pod. Rob, all the best. Again, thank you for your insight, and we'll be enjoying your commentary tonight as the Pacers head back to the Garden, all right?
You got it, guys. Good luck.
Good news, Pacer fans. Spike Lee will take his seat courtside tonight at the Garden, knowing that the bad blood between these two former heated rivals returns tonight. Scott Pollard, Charlie Clifford of Wish TV, Eddie Garrison. We are joined by the host of the world's greatest Pacer post-game show, the greatest post-game show, period, Eddie White. Eddie, your pre-game emotions, knowing that Knicks Pacers, you give me the proper perspective of what tonight feels like for you.
Well, I think we all hope it's just another chapter of a long book that, 5 chapters ago was on fire. The last couple chapters have been kind of boring. But as someone who's been around, has seen these games go, I love going back to the Hicks versus Knicks days, which I thought was just this absolutely incredible because it was portrayed, on the back of the New York Post, they had like a Beverly Hillbillies Jed Clampett-like truck and all the Pacers players on it. And it was, Hicks versus Knicks. When in reality, if you had put a tractor at midcourt, let's go way back in the day at Madison Square Garden or Market Square Arena, and there was a tractor and said, hey, whoever fixes this tractor gets a W in the series.
it would be the Knicks, because Oakley and Starks were country guys. Lou, who'd we have? We had Mark Jackson, New York. Chris Mullen, New York. Our owners were from New York. Our GM, Donnie Walsh, was from where? New York. I mean, they had that. They had the farmers. We had more city slickers than they did, but it was perceived as Hicks versus Knicks, and of course Reggie versus Spike. And
right.
Then I still that Larry Johnson 4-point play still is painful to me. It's like, you know, this is why we're fans, and this is why when we see somebody with Scott's talent go out and perform like he did, and we marvel at it, and we live with it, and we die with it, and we become passionate about it, because we remember these things. We remember, and weirdly, like coaches, we remember the bad stuff probably more than we remember the good stuff. But it's been a long, great rivalry, and hopefully with both teams kind of on the rise here, it takes another chapter.
Now, Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong, but Rick Smits is a mechanic, so if your tractor's broken, I think Rick might have been able to chip in there somehow.
The flying Dunking Dutchman was a mechanic?
Well, he's in the bikes, and you know, he might have been able to go with the. He might be good with the tractor. But I mean, if they went old school tractor, remember Rick's not going to fix it. He'll fix a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But I mean, Starks is the only guy in both teams that could ride a donkey. I mean, Starks was a freaking cowboy. I mean. But it's been a great rivalry. Great rivalry.
Eddie, it got a little external fuel with the Zerbiak comment. You know, look, it's been fun to chat about it externally. It sounds like maybe it was a little bit of a boost behind the scenes. I mean, look, Halliburton's been different in crunch time since that game. Your thoughts about his growth? You've seen Paul George jump onto the scene. You've seen Reggie jump onto the scene. You saw for a very brief period Victor Oladipo jump on the scene. Tell me what may be a little different about Tyrese Halliburton in his maturation in a very short amount of time. What's the story on that?
Yeah, it's been short. And you know, you hope with anything, you hope people don't change. But I think the one word you get with this guy is he's like real.
Yeah.
You know, I know people use the word authentic. I'm not smart enough. Too many syllables. But real, it's like, you know, before he joined us, you know, halfway through last year, and you weren't quite sure what we had. You know, saw a couple of good things. And in this off season, we took him around to different inner city playgrounds. Just it was like a surprise thing. It was kind of cool where the people like with the parks department, they knew
you
were coming.
I remember seeing you out there that day. That was
but
fun.
The people didn't know, right? The people didn't know.
No.
And you know, we told them, and to see him get out of the van, I was kind of the hype man. I never thought I'd add hype man to my resume, but I could jump out with a freaking blowhorn there, and I'm talking, hey, what are you guys doing out there? You want a little help? Hey, how about Tyrese Halliburton? And he comes out, and his engagement, whether it was with the kids or the parents or the older, quote-unquote, kids he was playing with, like on our last stop, was real. And you're like, holy smokes, can this guy be the real deal? And you see how young he is, you know, and you're like, wait a minute. And I think it starts with him, and you've seen it. I mean, you know, listen, could we win the World Championship this year? Probably not. But, you know, you never know. But, I mean, are we getting better? Are we better than people thought? Yeah, absolutely. Are we fun? Absolutely. And I think it all starts with him. And then you have all the other pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, they're all gelling quickly. And it seems like, you know, obviously everybody – the expectations were low for the season, and they're ahead of schedule in a rebuild, of course, based on this start. It's January, though, and they're a young team. Are they wearing out, do you think? Is the doldrums of the season getting to them at all, or do they still have the energy?
That's a great question, Scott. You might be predicting the future. Look, Scott, let's first answer your question. You and me, we walk into a room. I mean, we're magnetic. You know that. When it's a cigar bourbon thing, you and me walk in. We do to cigar bourbon parties what Halliburton has done to the Pacers. We know that. So we have a sense of what he's going through here. But you know this season, and you know these young players, especially the rookies. Not only do we have rookies that are playing. Not only do we have rookies that are playing, we have one that's starting, okay? And you know you get to this point of the season, you don't heal as quick, right?
Yep.
The practice is a little bit harder to get through. Something, you get a bump, you got a bruise, and you don't have to be a rookie. Look at McConnell the other day, get a little bump, and he's like, hey, I missed too many games last year. I'm playing. So they work through it, and you're going to have it's the grind. I mean, they're used to playing college seasons with 25, 30 games, maybe 32,
yep.
if you get into your postseason. Well, hell, they're going to be playing 80. That's after some preseason games, and hopefully some playoff games. So the bumps and the bruises, and you alluded to it there, the second half of the schedule, if you look at it, is a little bit more difficult than the first half. So you had the bumps and bruises. So temper anybody that thinks we're going to go on some 30-win back thing here and be first or second in the East. Hold on a second. You take them one at a time, and knock on wood, we've been relatively healthy this year, and you hope that that continues.
Pacers 23-18 in midway mark, 15-7 at home. It's Eddie White, host of the world's greatest postgame show, joining us now on the guest line, brought to you by the Mower Shop and Fishers, themowershop.com, all your snowblowers, commercial and residential mowers, plus service and power tools. Eddie, people forget that young Rick Carlisle was an assistant back in the day for Larry when things were mixing up at the Garden, a little scuffle between Ewing and Jalen Rose in the corner under the basket. He's seen the chapters that we're still reveling in. Your thoughts on probably the emotions that are going to hit Rick during starting lineups tonight, knowing he is one of the most exciting teams in the NBA that's on a perfect path if you're a smaller market club going into the Mecca. Your thoughts on how Rick handles moments like that, because you've spent more time close to this man than most in this town since he's come back for chapter number two.
Well, the word emotion could be described maybe me, because I'm like psychotic. I'm like nuts. But I think the key to Rick is he's kind of an even keel guy, and he never lets the emotion get to him. But where you really got to see the brilliance of Rick Carlisle is, listen, for people Rick's age and my age, you have to change with the times. The world has changed. Everything. It's like Jeopardy. Pick a subject. Geography, politics, sports, whatever. It has changed from when we were younger. And you have to change with the world. And the great ones, whether it's a player or a coach or it's a manager of a company or you're a politician, a mayor, a governor, whatever, you change. And, yep, and you're successful in the change. And I think the beauty of Rick Carlisle is he has changed. He maybe been old school back in the day, and now he's, because Larry was certainly old school, and now he's come in where he's more of like this older figure, but he gets these guys. Kevin Pritchard tells the story of, usually you come in after a game, you sit there, and you talk 5 minutes about what good happened, what bad happened, bada bing, bada boom, and you go forward. Well, the other night we had one of these great games. It was a great last second shot or something like that, and the dunk, and they spent the first couple minutes just watching the dunk. It was like a high school. It was like a college locker room.
Love it.
That's what Rick felt was the vibe of the room. Well, it takes somebody who is so secure in themselves as a successful person, what they do, again, whether you're a mayor, a governor, a politician, that you run a company, or you're a basketball coach, to be secure in yourself, to say, hey, I'm going to let this moment savor. This is the right thing for these guys, and he has done that. You look at the way he built his coaching staff and the way they coach. He's certainly different. He's won a lot. He has the credibility. He got the ring. But I think he has changed with the times, and I don't think he's ever been a better coach than he is right here at right now. And he just happens to have a very young,
right,
looks like, talented team. He's not coaching the team with Nowitzki and some really good players on it.
Yeah.
He's coached the younger team. So he might be the perfect coach at the perfect time for us as we develop and try to get better.
Eddie White, that's right on the money. Do you have a quick Spike story for us? Look, again, if you're just joining us, Eddie White's here. The Pacers are 8-2 since losing to the Knicks at the Fieldhouse. They're going to the Garden tonight, 7:30. We're absolutely amped about it here on The Fan. You have a go-to Spike story, Eddie? Come on, you have to have something in that Rolodex.
It's always the ones that, like, people don't want to hear. It's like, our market, Spike Lee is an enemy. Bill Belichick is an enemy. And it's like, I'm sitting there going, no, they're both really nice guys. I mean, you get to know them.
Yep.
Belichick is a riot. I mean, he's funny. Belichick can talk rock music. He's a great guy to have dinner with. And, but I get it. I get it. Right? In this market, they're Darth Vader. They're with the other team, which is fine. But I mean, at their core, they're not bad people. I mean, they're both very good at what they do. And Spike Lee just happens to be a big super fan of the other team. And even him and Reggie, you knew that was all good natured. I mean, come
for
on.
Sure.
I mean, Reggie and his wife at that time ended up doing stuff with Spike's studio. And so, I mean, Spike was in Reggie's documentary, back and forth. So, I mean, a lot of times that's for us, the fans, it's for the media, blah, 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 blah. But, it's not exactly professional wrestling. Well, the two guys are sitting there, having a cigar and a beer before they go out, and then they go out and kill each other in front of people. But it's probably a lot closer than we think. I think a lot of people I think it's respect.
Eddie,
you respect the people you go to war with.
Confirm this for me. I remember being a youngster at Conseco. It would have been year one of Conseco, 2000 Eastern Conference Finals. I believe upon admission to those games, they would hand out stickers with Spike's face with a big red cancel sign over it to every paying patron walking in to watch the series that the Pacers eventually won. Do you remember that? Is that accurate, or am I misremembering that?
I don't remember that. I mean, it may have.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. Remember when Michael came back, when Jordan came back in that game, there was the Wheaties was outside. That one card, they gave you up these cards, and one had Reggie on the side with the Wheaties logo, and the other had Michael on the side with the Wheaties logo. I think I still might have one of them.
It's going to be worth something.
But yeah, maybe. But yeah, I have no idea if they've given that stuff up. But you know, you play the angles. It's like the whole Zerbiak thing. I mean, the kid Wally apologized 2 days later.
Yeah.
But he, as you know, as a coach or a player, you look for motivation.
100%.
I mean, you look for something 100%. That makes you want to go. Scott, I mean, didn't you look for something? I mean, you're motivated anyway. But I mean, didn't you look for something to kind of make you turn it up a notch?
Absolutely, Eddie. That's what I was just talking about. Is before we had you on, I was saying, you know, this time of year, especially with a young team, anything to motivate you, anything to get you to remember what hotel you're in, what your room number is, what city you're in, what time zone you're in. And oh, by the way, I do have practice today, or I do not have practice today. Yeah, that's easy. And so the veterans latch onto that, and that's what McConnell's doing. He's reminding them of it daily. That's being a good vet, you know? Hey, remember what Wally said? Yeah, Tyrese is taking it, and he's been classy about it the whole time. But really, it's just Wally is entertainment. Wally's the WWF guy. We're the WWF guys right now.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting here not playing. We're talking.
Yeah.
And what we're saying is trying to get people to listen. And so Wally does that.
That
is
the goal.
Wally does that very well. And so when you get too upset, and Tyrese didn't, and that's the greatest thing about a young player, that here's the criticism. Here's criticism based on not a great resume of watching said criticism. And Wally admitted it. Wally admitted, like, yeah, I wasn't watching. I didn't know his resume very well. So, yeah, Ed, you know, this time of year, anything to get you up and get you going when you're in the halfway point of the season, take it and run with it.
Boom. Eddie White, thank you for taking the time, and hopefully we'll be hearing your voice after the clock strikes zero at the Garden. The Pacers make it 9 wins in 11 games. There is still room on the bandwagon, Indiana. Eddie White, thanks for hopping on the hotline.
Anytime, Mike. Anytime, you guys. And Scott, let's get together soon. I need a cigar.
Sounds good.
That's,
you need one. You've had three today already.
Eddie White on the Mower Shop from Fisher's Hotline, themowershop.com. All your snowblowers, commercial and residential mowers, plus service and power tools. Get to themowershop.com.
I'm going to say this about Mr. Irsay. I love working for him. He's a good man. He's a good owner. He has a lot of experience in this league. And we talk about everything. Look, we don't always agree. Like, if we're agreeing all the time, I'm not doing my job. If I'm sitting here just, you know, I mean, and I think y'all have been around me long enough to know that, like, it just comes out. Like, sometimes even when I don't want it to, it just comes out. Like, I'm going to be honest and tell you what I think. And I'm very honest with him about what I think. And he's very honest and direct with me. And at the end of the day, there's some decisions that I'll make, and you say, good, you know, okay, Chris, I don't completely agree with that, but go ahead, let's move forward. And there's some decisions that he'll make that I'll say, look, I don't completely agree with that, but we'll move forward. But when we make one, we make it, and we make it together, and we move forward. Mr. Irsay lets me do my job.
Chris Ballard has admitted he will change in terms of how he builds a team in the National Football League. He has admitted failure. He has admitted he needs to look inward and find a way to, quite honestly, save next season in order to save his job yet again in Indianapolis. The question now becomes, will Jim Irsay change? And that's why Bob Kravitz of The Athletic joins us this afternoon on the guest line, brought to you by the Mower Shop and Fishers, themowershop.com. All your snowblowers, commercial and residential mowers, plus service and power tools, get to themowershop.com. Scott Pollard, Charlie Clifford of Wish TV, Eddie Garrison. Bob, just within the past hour, you posted your latest column taking an inside look at Jim Irsay's portion of this story
What are the major takeaways from what you've gathered here now, 72 hours after one of the worst seasons in franchise history has come to an end?
Yeah, well, clearly Jim got way too meddlesome this year. I've been here 22 years and can never remember a season where Jim insinuated himself into the process. I mean, he's always been involved. He's always been a confidant. He's always been a sounding board. Sometimes he's been a rubber stamp. But for the most part, he has allowed his people to do what they do. He's let his football people take care of the football team. And I thought that I don't know what changed. I've had people tell me that they think that his criticism of Daniel Snyder, which was met with a lot of applause, emboldened him in some way. But for whatever reason, Jim's been on this kind of strange power trip. Yeah, along with the fact that I think he lost faith both in Ballard and Reich and has gotten too involved, and he needs to take a step back and let Chris Ballard try to fix what's been broken.
Do you think that that is an internal discussion they had? It's like, all right, I'm going to keep you, but you're on a short leash just to continue the power trip? Or do you think he's really actually going to just let him? Like, if they start out poorly next year, is he going to get fired?
You know, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why, Scott. Money. You know, I mean, he got an extension. Both him and Frank Reich got extensions till 2026. And I'm convinced the only reason that Chris is still here is that Jim didn't want to pay two guys millions of dollars to do absolutely nothing on his dime. So I do think, though, that if they really struggle, that Jim might get involved again. And that's not a good thing, because what this next team is going to need is patience with what we all presume will be a rookie quarterback.
Bob, you alluded to the change behind the scenes for Jim Irsay. I go back to when those extensions for Frank Reich and Chris Ballard were given out. There was a bit of an epiphany for Jim Irsay at Peyton's Hall of Fame induction, where he saw the Steelers' model of consistency and trust at both the head coaching and decision-making positions. And he saw that view. He knew he had two high-class individuals that were experts in their fields with Frank Reich and Chris Ballard. He spoke to that at training camp when those extensions were announced. And now you've segued to what we've heard most recently from Jim Irsay saying, Al Davis is my biggest influencer, quoting Davis. I mean, he's giving some pretty big hints here about, you know, this chapter of his ownership, and it feels like anything that Al would do, Jim is going to do. Am I approaching something that sounds factual at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jim fancies himself as one of the old school owners, you know, one of the guys who protects the shield and all that nonsense. But, you know, like Rooney, like Mara, I'm not sure where the Al Davis thing came from, to be honest with you, except he likes Just Win Baby, you know. But I think what changed everything, guys, is the Carson Wentz signing. I think that Jim was not completely on board when that decision was made, but he let his guys do their thing, and Carson Wentz turned out to be a small disaster. You know, a small disaster, not a you know, epic disaster. I mean, they were 9-6 before things went south, and he did throw 27 touchdown passes to 7 interceptions. But I think he lost faith in those guys once Carson Wentz failed to pan out. And I think what happened this year was really an extension of that.
Look, Bob, in terms of what we heard from Chris Ballard yesterday, what did you want to hear that you ultimately didn't hear from Chris Ballard in his season-ending press conference?
You know, I thought he touched all the bases. I mean, he took 47 questions, for crying out loud.
Right.
And, you know, Chris fell on his sword. He did everything that Jeff Saturday didn't do. You know, I like Jeff a lot.
Yeah, we all do.
But I thought that he was in the excuse-making business on Monday. You know, I didn't have my own coaches. I didn't have a full coaching staff, yada, yada, yada. Look at the way they did things here before I got here. I couldn't have fixed this if I tried. I thought that Chris was, accepted culpability for what happened. I just thought the way he sat down and said, the first thing he said was, I failed.
Yeah. Right to the point.
What else can you ask for?
Yeah.
From a general manager? He totally took the blame. He deserves a lot of it. A lot of it goes on Irsay. But, you know, I would like to see Ballard given back the power that he once had. I thought, though, that quote that you played, that tape, was Chris Ballard saying, hey, I'm not going to rip the guy who writes my paycheck.
Of course.
I mean, you know, he'd be completely crazy. At one point, I thought he may just say the hell with this and quit.
I thought the night Jeff got hired, Bob, you do not have to be a PhD in reading body language. I've never seen a general manager in any setting, you know, he was pissed. There was no way around it.
He looked like he'd rather be having a proctology exam that night. Oh, God. And I guarantee you haven't heard proctology on this station for a very long time.
Bob, speaking of that and that decision back then, but also the words he used yesterday, I'm hearing a general manager saying, no, he lets me do my job. Mr. Irsay's a listener was repeated multiple times yesterday or in the press conference. Do you think that's true? Do you think Irsay's going to keep meddling. And because of the thing that you said, he's got a paycheck. He's got money invested in this guy. He doesn't want to let him go, but he's certainly not going to let him free.
No, that's the problem. That's why I wrote.
So it's
going to
be more of the same.
Yeah, it very well could be. I would hope that Jim is self-aware enough to understand and maybe even read some of what we've all been saying. that this just can't continue, because this is the way a bad franchise is run. This is the way Bob Irsay, his father, used to run the Indianapolis Colts, and that cannot continue. And the Baltimore Colts, and that can't continue. I just think he needs to have his faith restored in Ballard. I think Ballard obviously has everything to do with that, and let him get the quarterback that he wants. He said yesterday that he'll do whatever it takes to get the guy he wants. He didn't say the quarterback, but I think anybody with a brain understands that that's what they're going to do. It's going to be C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young or Will Levis, and I'd be completely shocked if they go in a different direction.
Bob Kravitz of The Athletic joins us. Please read Bob's latest take on The Athletic. A cry from many Colts fans across Indianapolis for, look, just some stability up top in terms of the decision-making. Bob, interviews have begun. We learned earlier today, Bubba Ventrone, the special teams coordinator, who I thought would have been a complete change of demeanor on the sideline in the middle of the season. I thought it was the easy, obvious choice. Jim decided to go with Jeff Saturday. I personally didn't really see anything different on the sideline from Jeff Saturday. He's a very positive guy to the tune of Sam Ehlinger throws that pick six against the Texans. Jeff Saturday is on the field giving Sam a high five coming off the field. There was just no change in terms of what we saw on the sideline. I thought Bubba would have been the answer. He gets an interview today. Let me ask you this. Jim Harbaugh's name still, we're Wednesday afternoon, it has not surfaced in terms of lining up an interview with the Colts. Many are confused and wondering if it will ever surface in this process. What's your crystal ball say? What's going to happen?
Jim Harbaugh will be a part of this process. There was a story, and forgive me if I get it wrong. It might have been Tom Pelissero or Hugh Rappaport. I'm not sure. Saying that he wanted to step aside for a while and let Jeff Saturday, a guy he respects a lot, let him do his interview and then maybe come in at a later time. I think you absolutely have to make Jim Harbaugh say no. And I read something else, again, I don't know if it was Pelissero or Rappaport, that this is the job that Jim Harbaugh wants. You know, Denver's going to make a run at him. Now, why Jim would want this job, I have no idea, because of the ownership situation and you don't have a quarterback. But I think this is the place he wants to come. I just think you have to make him say no, and then you move on to other candidates.
You heard from Ballard yesterday. Of course, they will look at the college ranks. They will also consider those who have no head coaching experience. Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn.
Jeff Saturday.
Ejiro Givero, the defensive coordinator for the Broncos, who's done a nice job. Raheem Morris, D.C. with the Rams. Among those who have been requested reportedly. Bob, how big of a long shot would another outside-the-box coach with no experience at the NFL ranks? To me, that feels like a very risky proposition for a general manager who knows this is it. This is his last shot. What's your take on if it's not Harbaugh, who they'll be looking at?
Well, that's where it gets real dicey. First of all, Jim wants to make a splash.
Of course, you know,
Jim. Jim knows that this was a hot mess, and he needs to do something to get the fans back. You know, this whole idea with Saturday, how you can possibly sell Jeff Saturday to the fan base is beyond me. None of those names really intrigue me much, but I say that having not done my due diligence on guys like Ivero and people like that. Now, Raheem Morris was a head coach back in the day. I think it was in Tampa.
Yep.
So he does have that experience. But I just think the list begins and ends with Harbaugh. And if that doesn't work out, I'll tell you another guy that I really like is Dan Quinn. I mean, Dan Quinn has done a great job in Dallas as a DC. He got the Atlanta Falcons with, you know, a young Matt Ryan
yep.
to the Super Bowl and should have won that damn thing. So I think Dan Quinn is another guy that they ought to consider real strongly.
Bob, you mentioned that Harbaugh would want to come in and make a splash. How's he going to do that with a GM that's on such a tight leash and the decision maker? I mean, any coach, really. Any coach that wants to come in here, well, you're looking at a GM that's definitely being played like Pinocchio right now before he became a real boy. And what's the future in that? And why are you sitting here going, oh, yeah, I've got faith in my ability to coach this franchise long term. I don't see it.
I think, Scott, that you've got a GM and a new coach who are going to be at cross purposes. You've got a GM who wants to get this thing fixed now, you know, because he may not have a lot longer to do it. And you've got a coach who's going to probably come in with a rookie quarterback. And we all know what it takes with rookie quarterbacks. Peyton Manning was 3-13 his first year.
Yeah, this is a 3-year outlook, Indianapolis. I hope everybody's ready for that.
Oh, at the very least. And, you know, I mean, look, occasionally rookies come in and do amazing things. Andrew Luck was 11-5 with a completely rebuilt team in 2012. So it can happen. I mean, the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken, got to the Super Bowl during Roethlisberger's first or second year.
Mm-hmm.
So it can,
Joe
it
Burrow
can
year two.
Yeah. So, you know, Dan Marino. So with special guys, it can happen. The problem, I think, is that you don't have an Andrew Luck in this draft. I think Bryce Young is a real intriguing prospect, but he doesn't have the size that you would hope you get with a number one pick at quarterback. Stroud looked great in the CFP, but he hasn't done it all year. And Will Levis, you know, he looks like Adonis. He's got a great arm. But, you know, is he going to be Josh Allen or is he going to be something far less than that?
Right.
So there's not a clear but we got to have them kind of guy out there, not like Andrew Luck or Peyton.
I would pay to be in Ed Dodds and Morocco Brown's scouting rooms because surely the Colts know who their guy is. And now the question is, do they do the move with the Bears to go to one? Bob Kravitz will continue to monitor the head coaching search. Please read him on The Athletic. Bob, appreciate you jumping on today. Great to hear from you and continued success with all your endeavors with the ALS work behind the scenes. Congratulations on all your progress on that department from a philanthropic standpoint.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. Good talking to you guys.